I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hello folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. And Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. This is a common sense based practical show. I don't get into a lot of tinfoil hat conspiracy type thinking. I just keep this rooted in what we call common sense. Unfortunately, common sense ain't so common, but I'm going to try the best I can to portray some practical ideas on how we can live a better life today, and if something happens, we're going to be ready for it. So in the last podcast, if you listened, I talked about what to do after a disaster, basically cleaning up the mess, and I talked about that there were three messes that are probably going to happen after any kind of a disaster hits. One's going to be the emotional mess, another's going to be the financial mess, and then the physical mess. And I got some more thoughts on that I want to share with you. And so this is episode number 83, and let's go ahead and dive into the main topic matter. I got a few things I want to share with you, then I have a couple of announcements, and then I'm going to wrap it up with some more thoughts. But getting back to what happens if a tragedy occurs, if it's a natural disaster like a hurricane or tornado or flood or fire or earthquake or something like that, that unfortunately if it wipes you out, wipes out your family, wipes out your home. Hate to think about that, hate to talk about that, but these types of things can and do happen without warning. I think we all know that. And recovering from these disasters is a very, very gradual process. But the most important thing is safety. Safety is probably the primary issue, I would say, in trying to recover from something like this. And of course, your mental and your physical well-being. All right? Now, I believe that your first concern, and I didn't get a chance to cover this too much. I touched on it a little bit in the last show, but I want to expand on it. Your first concern after a disaster is going to be your family's health and safety. You need to consider the possible safety issues and monitor your family's health after a tragedy occurs. So let's talk about injured people, all right? When you encounter someone injured, whether it's someone in your family, whether it's a neighbor, friend, whatever, don't attempt to start moving people who are injured, all right? Unless they're in immediate danger, still, after the disaster, don't move them. Leave them alone, okay? If they're unconscious, you have to move them, stabilize the neck and the back first, and then call for help. If the person is not breathing, all right, carefully position the victim and start doing CPR. Start doing artificial respiration. All right, you know, as we know, clear the airway. Start the mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Hopefully, you're trained in that. Take a good CPR course. It's something we should all do, taking CPR courses. I mean, and this is where it's going to start to pay off, is after a disaster. Maintain their body temperature. That's important. You don't want their body temperature to fluctuate too much. Make sure that they don't become overheated, especially. And in most climates in the United States, we're starting to get into late spring, and we're starting to get into summer, especially here where I live in Texas. It's going to start getting hot pretty soon. If a disaster happens, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be overheated. A lot of people are going to have heat exhaustion. We see that anyway a lot in Texas, folks, and a lot of the southern states in the summertime. Disaster or no disaster, there's people that are hurt from heat exhaustion and heat stroke and so forth. That's something you're going to have to pay attention to. Okay? But the bottom line is, with injured people, you want to leave as much to the authorities, to the medical authorities that you can, the people that are going to administer help, the EMTs and the paramedics. If you can't, obviously this is where your first aid skills are going to come into play. And, you know, I did that whole podcast, that whole interview with Ghost Rider from our forum about first aid. So if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. I don't want to turn this into a first aid show because there's a few more topics I want to cover and I don't want to get too far off track. But just about everything that he and I talked about in that interview, we will apply after a disaster. Okay? Just be careful not to try to do too much all at once. When you're picking up the pieces, you're helping injured people, you're trying to figure out your insurance claims, you're trying to figure out everything you need to do, take care of your kids, make sure everybody is okay, set priorities. Pace yourself. Get rest. Drink a lot of good, clean water. If you don't have clean water, I hope you've got your supplies to purify water. I hope you can either bleach it, you got your water purification tablets, you got good filters, maybe if you can boil it, boil it. Try to eat well. Here's where food storage comes into play. Hopefully, if your food storage hasn't been wiped out, if it has been wiped out, obviously, then you're going to be, hopefully exercising your network of people. Hopefully, you got a network of people that you can go to help get some good food. And, of course, if it's your whole neighborhood wiped out, this is where having a plan, a bug-out location, another place you can go to, another family you can stay with, obviously, they're going to be able to help take care of you in that situation as well. Okay? Once all that has taken place, once everybody's stabilized and the authorities say, okay, now it's time for you to return home. All right, we got this under control. Hopefully that's a short period of time. And I guess what I'm talking about here in this show is more short-term disasters rather than real long-term disasters. Because if it's long-term, we're going to be retreating to our bug-out locations and so forth. We're going to be digging into our long-term survival plans that we've planned in advance. But if it's short-term, if it's a few days, a week or two, and all of a sudden they say, okay, now you can return home after the disaster. This can be pretty physically and mentally challenging. Okay, a few things I want to share with you, some things to think about when it's time to go back home. Keep a battery-powered radio with you so that you can listen for the emergency updates and the news reports that are going to be coming from the authorities and on the news. Also use battery-powered flashlights to inspect the damage. Obviously, if you're coming back at night, this is going to be huge. The flashlight needs to be turned on outside before you enter the property, obviously. One of the things you have to be careful of is the battery might produce a spark that could ignite leaking gas. If you have leaking gas, you got to be real careful. Obviously, this is common sense, but don't enter the house with a lantern. I mean, I got to say that even though it's kind of common sense, I got to put that out there. All right. Now, there's also going to be possibly some critters that are in your house. Disaster situations creates a lot of unpredictable behavior of wild animals. And it's not uncommon for wild animals to infest properties and be hanging out in your house when you come back after a disaster. So let me talk a little bit about that. I touched a little bit about this on this in the last podcast. I didn't get too much in depth into it. Let me kind of dig a little bit deeper in this subject. Don't approach or attempt to help an injured or stranded animal that might be on your property after a disaster. Try to get the animal control authorities there if possible. If they are available and if they can make it to your place, that's who you want to get there. Don't corner wild animals and don't try to rescue them. Most of these wild animals, if they're in your house after a disaster, they're going to feel threatened too. I know you don't want them there. I know they're not welcome. But guess what? They took up camp in your house. They're going to feel threatened. And they're probably not going to take too kindly if you are cornering them and threatening them. So be careful the way you approach them. You may have animals like snakes, possums, coons. A lot of them, if there's been a flood, a lot of them seek refuge from floods in people's homes. After the water recedes a little bit, they'll start hanging out in homes, especially because they can forage for food in your house after a disaster. Okay? One thing you want to do is, as soon as possible, is open up a window. Give the animal some kind of an escape route. Chances are, it's going to leave on its own. Don't attempt to capture them or anything else like that. Okay? Don't attempt to move a dead animal either. One of the reasons you don't want to do that is animal carcasses can present a lot of health problems, a lot of risks. Again, if there are authorities available that can make it to the scene, try to get them there to remove the dead animal. If you got to remove it yourself, some things you need to understand, make sure you got plenty of plastic bags. Hopefully you have put away a lot of plastic bags. Use a lot of bleach to disinfect the area after you've moved the dead animal. Wear rubber gloves. It's best to have the rubber gloves that are long, that come up all the way past your elbow. The more protection that you can give yourself if you have to move a dead animal, if you have to, but try to avoid doing that if possible. Okay, enough on animals and things like that. Few more thoughts on putting things back together, and then I'm going to move on to the next subject. Let me get into actually putting your home back and putting your life all back in order. I understand that your home's worth a lot to you, and there's going to be an emotional need to get back into your house as quick as possible and put it all together. And there's going to come a time where you're going to have to rebuild things. You're going to have to deal with your insurance company. You're going to have to hire contractors to start rebuilding your home and helping you rebuild your life. And I know that people's homes mean a lot, but this is when dishonest contractors come knocking. After disasters is when you start getting all the crooks, the contractor crooks out there taking advantage of people, okay? And too often homeowners get victimized by overpriced and very shoddy contractors and shoddy work, okay? And I want to share some things with you that actually happened to a friend of mine several years ago, and this might help you out. First of all, when you might be thinking, okay, well, what do I do? How do I find a reliable person to help me start rebuilding things? Maybe you're like me. Maybe you're not all that handy and can't put a lot of this stuff back together. Maybe there's just certain parts of putting your home back together that you know how to do, and you're going to have to hire out help. And let's face it, a good help is going to be hard to find because they're going to be overworked. Okay, first of all, make sure that the contractor proves that they're licensed and bonded. Don't do business with them if they don't have the proper license, bonding, and insurance. Check with the information that that regulates the businesses and professionals out there. Check with the agencies that regulate Better Business Bureau, so forth, in your area. Also, get a few, obviously this is common sense, but get a few written estimates to give you details about what has to be done. Get them to write down the materials, the exact labor charges, the start and the finish date. Get a clear and detailed contract as to what they're going to do and how it's going to protect you if they should screw up their work. Okay, they need to spell out in the contract what they're going to do, who does what, when, where, and for how much. It's so many people are so emotionally distraught after a disaster, they're just willing to accept anybody that'll help them. It doesn't matter, just somebody come and help. That's where you get stung. Okay, I don't care if you're buying services, your materials, your goods, whatever. Even if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you're putting your home back together. When you're going and you're buying services, read purchase contracts carefully. Don't get stung. Okay, a friend of mine paid cash up front several years ago after their house was wiped out by a tornado. And don't do that. Don't pay cash up front for things. I know I've talked about on this show before having cash for an emergency. This is, you know, you might disagree with me on this. I don't know. But I'm going to say paying a contractor to put your house back together is probably when you don't want to use cash. You want to use cash if you have to buy food, if you have to get people to help you with basic services that you don't have up front. If there's some kind of a failure in the banking system after a disaster, obviously, you know, you're going to be able to buy everyday goods and services. But whenever possible, just use any kind of – use your debit cards – to pay for the work, write checks for deposits if you have to. If you do have to pay for some cash up front, pay cash up front to a contractor, for gosh sakes, don't give them the whole amount. Wait, make the final payment until after the work is done. I guess that's what I'm saying. Just be real careful about scams and things like that, because the scam artists are going to be out in full force. Okay, you also have to watch out for a lot of people that are going to be trying to get your personal information after a disaster. They're going to be trying to get bank account numbers, PIN numbers, credit card numbers, your social security number, and so forth. A lot of criminals will be out trying to get your personal information to access your accounts. They're going to be out there preying on emotionally distraught people. And trust me, you might say to yourself, Bob, you might say to me, Bob, I'm not going to be one of those kinds of people because I'm strong, I'm a survivalist, I prepare, I'm emotionally ready for it. Think again. Even though you think you're emotionally ready, something like your home getting wiped out can take such a huge toll on you, you can't imagine what it's going to do to you. Okay? Be very suspicious of any individuals going door to door and calling on you and talking to you about fundraising efforts. community organizations and trying to get donations and things like that. If they're a legitimate company, if they really are representing somebody that is part of a help or relief effort, most of them are going to show identification, and they're not going to require any cash up front. That's what I'm talking about. Also, price gouging. Okay, if you notice price gouging on you or anybody else after a disaster, if the authorities are available, get a hold of them. Okay, just be careful. That's all I'm talking about here. And so, to avoid rambling on this subject any further, let me just shift gears just a bit here and talk about the emotional toll that disasters can take on you, and then I'll move on to something else that I want to talk about. It's quite normal for people to experience some stress for several days, maybe even weeks after a natural disaster. And usually, at first, people are going to experience shock and denial shortly after the disaster happens. When people are in shock, they typically are stunned, dazed, their denial takes over, means that they cannot acknowledge that this whole thing has occurred, and they still have not been able to fully experience the intensity of what's happened. After those initial shock reactions subside, people's reactions can start to vary a lot right after that. Most people experience shock in a similar way, but then when that's gone, this is where the unpredictability of a disaster takes place. And this is where people can start to get way out of control. Okay, sometimes feelings of anger and fear can be triggered by specific reminders of the natural disaster. Some people will have reactions immediately following the event, and some are going to have delayed reactions. Some people are going to have cognitive reactions. What I mean by that is a lot of them are going to be confused. They're going to be disoriented, worried, indecisive. They're going to have negative thoughts about themselves. They might blame themselves in some way, shape, or form for the disaster happening. They may have fear, guilt, resentment, all kinds of emotional things start taking over, and then the physical reactions start taking place. Tension, fatigue, restlessness, they can't sleep, their body starts to ache, they're in pain, they can't eat, they start having a racing heartbeat, nausea, things like that. Then all of a sudden the relationships start to crumble. And folks, this is where you got to stay close-knit as a family, and this is where the strong support of family and friends come in, because if you start withdrawing and isolating from others and isolating yourself after a disaster and start putting distance between yourself, it's just going to make the whole situation a lot worse. You are going to need people's help. Reach out, take it, ask for it if you need to. Okay? And since I'm on the family subject, I want to close with this. Comforting kids after some kind of a disaster. Some things I want to share with you about doing that, because folks, we adults, we're going to be saddled with the burden of putting things back together, and our kids are going to be leaning on us more than ever. Reassure your kids with physical affection, hugs, pats on the back, holding their hands, things like that. And don't be afraid to let young children start relieving their tension and expressing their own concerns and their own thoughts that they have. Play games, let them engage in drawing and things like that. Things to start getting some of their stress out of themselves as well. If you have older kids, teenagers, young adults, talk to them directly about their thoughts and feelings. And don't dismiss them. Don't dismiss their feelings also. I talked about this a little bit in the last podcast, but the next subject I want to talk about is decreasing the kids' exposure to the news reports. It's pretty easy for kids to relive the trauma and get all worked up again if they're listening to what's likely to be the negative news, the extreme negative news after some kind of a disaster. Okay? So work on that kind of stuff with your kids. And remember that the emotional toll of a natural disaster cannot be underestimated. It's very important to recognize that the kinds of things I just described can be very normal for people to go through when some kind of a tragic event like this has happened to them. And if anything I've covered so far has given you some things to think about in your preparations right now, that's been my goal, is to help you think right now, because as we all know, proper planning prevents pitiful poor performance. And that also applies to putting back the pieces. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead and finally conclude the cleanup of a disaster topic from the last podcast and the first half of this one. Now let's shift gears. I'm going to talk about another subject called margin. And this is going to kind of segue into the next series, the next couple podcasts. I'm going to be talking about margin in your life. You might say, Bob, that's strange. That's a weird survival topic. You know, do you have any margin in your life? What does that mean? Well, if you're a business person, you know what margin means. You know, your margin of profit, what you have left over after all of your cost of goods sold is calculated. That's what I'm talking about. And the same way that a business works on margin, our lives work on margin. And I want to start a new theme now called Slow Down and Survive. All right? Slow down and survive. We have margin in our lives when our resources exceed our needs. I'll say that again. We have margin in our life when the resources that we have far exceed the needs that we have. And a lot of us folks don't like to think that we have limits. But we do. We have limits on the commitments that we can make. Sometimes we take on way, way too much. And I want to submit this to you. The challenge is to not commit to more than you have resources for. When you do that, you've got margin in your life. And balancing your commitments helps you maintain some of that personal margin. And if you consistently live a marginless life, something's going to have to give. Usually, it's finances, marriage, and things like that that start to give. So I want to ask you a question. I want you to ponder something, and I want you to think about this as I start to bring this podcast to a close, because I want to get your gears in your mind churning about what kind of margin do you have in your life, and where has your margin gone? If you don't have any, if you're all stressed out, if you're maxed, if you just can't take it anymore, if you're like, you know what, I don't have another minute left to do anything else. And see, this is one of the big excuses for not preparing that I read when I read things on the internet and when I listen to people talk, or when I read posts on forums when somebody says, well, you know, I just haven't gotten around to preparing in a certain area. Most people say, well, I don't have any time. I don't have any time, and I don't have any money. What they're really saying is they don't have any margin. Okay? They have no margin. And a lot of them are distracted by a lot of things. And some of the things that they're distracted by, they may think that they're doing good things. They may think, well, you know what? I got to tend to this. I got to tend to that. My son needs this. My spouse needs that. My animals need something else. My boss is riding my rear end. And this is just all so much. I just can't take this anymore. And you're thinking to yourself, I'm trying to do all these good things. And what's happening is they're sucking you dry of your margin. And there's something called activity overload. And it's not uncommon for families to be out 4 to 5 nights a week with activities. Kids have sports. Kids have band. You have one, maybe two jobs. Your spouse has one, maybe two jobs. You know, folks, that there's kids, there's young kids out there playing 82-game baseball seasons in the springtime. I think that's just way too much for kids to be put through. I noticed that our neighbor was telling me that his 9-year-old, they're going to play over 80 games in their spring baseball league. Kids that are 9 years old, give me a break. And with all the modern technology we have, cell phones, internet, computers, all that kind of stuff, these things can overload us on our accessibility. I get frustrated with this, folks. I get frustrated that I'm just way too accessible. I mean, yes, I like the internet. Yes, I like doing these podcasts. I love the forum. I love the chat room. I like email. I love my iPhone, all that kind of stuff. But sometimes I got to put the brakes on. And I got to say, you know what? I got to get away from this stuff. And so it was fun to just go take my son out fishing the other day. And the only time I turned my iPhone on when I was out fishing the other day was to take that video that I posted on the forum. That's it. You got to get away, folks. Information overload. I mean, we've got Kindles for audiobooks and things like that. And, you know, we can download thousands and thousands of books and podcasts like this one and all kinds. Just be careful. I know I might be killing myself here when I say be careful of information overload. You're going to go, all right, Bob, I'm going to turn you off. I'm going to quit listening. Well, if you got to take a break from me, I can understand that too. You know, that's perfectly okay. Do you realize that there's more information in one edition of the New York Times today that people that lived in the 19th century were ever exposed to in their entire life? Okay? And today we actually believe that with that kind of information and that kind of stuff going on, that's the way that we're supposed to live. I submit to you that that's not the way we're supposed to live. And I know that what I'm starting to talk about here might be a little bit out of the norm, a little out of the ordinary, a little bit out of the box compared to what the way a lot of us live today. But I want you to think about why do we engage in all this information overload and all these activities? Why do we do that? Have we kind of slipped into some kind of a modern idolatry and so forth? Okay? We don't really think that we already have everything that we need when most of us really do. We start getting overtaken by the feeling that there's always more out there to fulfill us. I think survivalists learn to be content. Survivalists learn to be content with what they have. They do what they can with what they have wherever they are. And I think nothing is more true than that. And that's one of the reasons why I've adopted that quote by Teddy Roosevelt for this show. The sad truth is that we may never think that we have everything that we need. So we go overboard trying to make sure that our kids get more than we ever have, that they get more than what we had when we were young. They don't need it, trust me. They don't. And some of the healthiest, strongest, and most secure people that I know have very little in their life. But they have a virtue that I think is one of the strongest virtues of most survivalists today, and that is the virtue of contentment. They have very little in their life, but they are content. I also find that people that have margin in their life, and a lot of people who are survivalists, they are people of faith, and that faith helps them become more content. Survivalists learn to be content with what they have and not overload. So I'd like to leave you with a suggestion. When you are going about your preparations, please be careful not to take on too much. I'm so guilty of this, folks. I mean, this is hard for me. And sometimes I take on too much in producing this podcast and all the other things that I've got going on. Be careful not to try to do everything all at once. Set modest goals at first. Remember that show I did on smart survival goal setting? That smart meant your goals have to be simple, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time sensitive. That's what smart means. Simplify your life a little bit, folks. Are you living under the need for approval or under the need of the culture that we live in or the needs that the culture we live in makes you think you need to have? Are you maybe living your life to prove to yourself, to a parent whose approval that you never got when you were young? Maybe are you trying to prove to them that you're capable of something? Or are you living your life for yourself? That's what I want you to think about. So I'll close with this final question. What governs you? What governs you? What makes you motivated? Do you have that margin in your life? Are you taking care of you? I'll leave you with that thought, because the question of what governs you is going to set up the next episode that I'm probably going to publish early next week. So think about that. What governs you? And so with that, this is Bob Main, and you've just listened to another episode of Today's Survival Show, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice, to live life the way you want to live it, whether there's been a disaster that has hit your home and hit your neighborhood, or whether you're just dealing without any margin left in your life. And it's my goal to help you strengthen that person. As Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Don't forget to support the show. Have a great one, and I'll catch you in episode 84. Thanks.
This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.